Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Cover, of course, hosted by myself, John Robb, and Jeff Ayers. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing great. What time is it, anyway?
It's 8 o'clock Pacific. We are a half hour later than normal because I was taping another show for Crime and Science Radio that will be played in March. It was a fascinating show with Catherine Roberts. People will love to hear that. But our show, we're very excited that we're able to have author Mark Greaney on. Of course, Mark has been writing a couple his fourth novel of Tom Clancy series, but it's exciting because he's back with his latest Gray Man novel, Backblast, so it'd be exciting to get Mark on the phone and see what he's got going on.
Absolutely.
So you ready to do it? Let's do it.
Well, let's do it. Let's get Mark on here.
What do you know? He's right here. There he is. Mark, thanks so much for coming on, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You're the first time you've been on Beyond the Cover. I know I interviewed you in the past, of course, with Gray Man. I think when your first novel came out, that was the first time I spoke with you.
Right.
When Gray Man came out. So your career has, I guess you wanted to say, escalated very quickly. But it's great that you're back here with your latest book, another Gray Man novel called Backblast. So let's just jump right into it and give us the what for here on what you got going on.
Yeah, Backblast is the fifth book in this series that I started in 2009. And just as an aside, I think the first time I went to a conference, VoucherCon conference, is in San Francisco. And you were actually one of the first people I met, and you were super nice to me. You were one of the first people that was nice to me.
Everybody was.
He doesn't know you very well, there, John.
Well, you haven't been nice to me since, but
Okay. We don't want anybody to know all that. We can't tell everybody that, so it's good.
Yeah. No. I remember it very distinctly, meeting you for the first time in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then you had me on this show for Gray Man, and I guess my invitation got lost in the mail for a couple of years, but I'm back now, and I couldn't be happier.
Oh, what a dig. I love it.
Backblast is number five. So if we do every fifth book, is that how you run it with guys? I like it.
Pretty much, yeah. What I like to do, to do every fifth, because otherwise, I mean, I just can't stand people on the radio with me all the time. I got to change shit up.
I understand. I get it. I'm the same way. So it's a story. It's the series is about a former CIA paramilitary operations officer who has been burned by the CIA, and they've been after him for several years, and he doesn't really know why. And he's been making ends meet in the third world, working basically as a contract killer, but he always sort of takes jobs. He doesn't care who he works for. He'll work for the worst people in the world. He has no morals about that. But his morals are that the person that he's sent to terminate, you know, has earned what's coming to them. So that's kind of been the conceit of the story arc for the past four books, and now we are in book five, and I've teased it as long as I felt like I reasonably could, the fact that we don't really know why the CIA has been after him for all these years, and the hero, Court Gentry, the Gray Man, doesn't know why the CIA is after him. But in book five, he has made his way back into the United States for the first time in several years, in 5 years. He's in Washington, D.C., and he has this plan, this mission to get his very personal mission to get his, you know, his hands around the throat of all the guys that he thinks might know the answer to what's going on. And the book has a lot of intrigue, and there's a big geopolitical element in the story, but it's also at its core a real mystery and a real sort of a search for this character who, let's say he's a lonely guy that's trying to figure out, you know, why the country he loves so much doesn't love him back the same way. And he's in the actual worst part of America. He's in Washington, D.C., trying to shake down some of the shadiest people in America, some government officials, to find out what this is all about. So it's a big, you know, it's an action thriller, just like everyone in the series. but it also has mystery. It also has a ton of intrigue. There are definitely a lot of tradecraft, a lot of espionage stuff, and some geopolitical backbone to the story, too. So that's basically what Backlash is about.
I'm a huge fan of The Gray Man. I think Backlash is the best one in the series. But I've got to ask you, how difficult is it to keep upping the stakes in action with each book?
It is difficult. It's fun. Like, I don't, action-wise, I get a lot of just sort of ideas in my head that are just put off into corners of my mind, or sometimes I'll write things down. I'll be on a train and I'll get an idea about a train, or I'll be on an airplane and I'll get or see something on TV and just want to explore that from a kinetic action story. And then when I'm writing a book, sometimes these things fit in, or the opposite will happen. I will write my character into a corner and realize there's no clever intrigue or tradecraft or smart way to get out of this, so it's going to be an action way out of it. It's real important, and I talk to other writers all the time, and we talk about this, the difference between the people who are just trying to find their way as writers and people that have been doing it for a while is, you realize you can't do the same thing over and over, and, I've joked with my editor before about all the different action scenes I've had in all my books, and I'm like, sooner or later, it's going to be two guys fighting with knives in a hot tub, and I'll be like, wait, I've already written the knife fight in the hot tub scene. At some point you will have come up with every possible permutation. But I do like making things bigger, and I like seeing kinetic things on the screen when I'm watching movies, and when I read a book, it's such a rich palette that you can't get in a movie when the book is in your mind, and I really like doing my best to send the readers there, and that might be with some sort of underlying tension. It might be a conversation in a conference room, but it also might be just a wild action scene. And I like both things as elements of a story. So it gets tougher as you've done you pick the low hanging fruit and you've done the action scenes that are easy to come up with. But it's fun to always come up with something new.
Now, of course, people that have followed your career know that you have now written some Tom Clancy books, and the latest one just come out not too long ago. So how has that experience writing, it's still in the same kind of genre, but of course it's a much different style of writing that the Clancy fans have done to what you have done. Do you think that you've incorporated some of the things? Have you changed yourself? Because from writing book one to book five with Clancy kind of in between, you got to figure that you've grown so much as an author. Can you kind of speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, great question. I know that I have, and there's never been any sort of a conscious effort to, like, let's make The Gray Man more Clancy-like, but just by nature of the research and the scope of the Tom Clancy books I've done, I wrote three books with Tom before he passed away in 2013, and now I've written three books since he's died, Jack Ryan books, and I'm doing a fourth later this year. They require so much research and so much depth and a lot of location research. And the book that you mentioned, Commander-in-Chief, which came out in December, I went to Camp Pendleton in California. I went to the Naval Base of San Diego. I went to the Pentagon. I went to Lithuania and Poland and Belgium and Luxembourg. And, you just do a massive amount of research for what you're trying to do, read tons of stuff, too. So this newest Gray Man, and Jeff will probably attest to this, it's a longer book than the first one. The first book was a little bit more diehard, and I sometimes say that this Backlash is diehard meets all the president's men. So there's this kind of Washington, exploration, mystery, intrigue thing going on, and there's a real shoot 'em up, guns blazing down the National Mall of D.C. So that has developed through the work with Tom Clancy. And then a more simple answer to your good question is I've met so many people working with Tom Clancy. When you're the guy writing the next Jack Ryan book and you're up at the Pentagon or you're at the Defense Intelligence Agency or whatever, it's the darndest thing. People will talk to you and, they're fascinated. They're fascinated that you're fascinated and you have a question. And, you know, you work with the Navy or whatever, and the Secretary of the Navy wrote me a super nice letter last year and said, hey, if you ever need any help, you know, in the Navy realm, I really liked your last book, and I'd love to help out. And, you know, you asked me if you need something, and I'm the guy that'll call you up. And I was at Naval Base San Diego on an early Burke class destroyer just a few months later and meeting with anti-submarine warfare people. So I will take you up on that offer. I realize I'm in a very unique position and I need to exploit the crap out of it. So that's what I do. And all that works its way. The Grantman is definitely a more street level, gritty type of a novel than a Tom Clancy novel. You're not in the Oval Office with a Grantman novel, but,
right.
It has definitely expanded after working with the Tom Clancy books.
I would compare the new one also to the Bourne Identity in a good way, just so you know that.
Yeah.
I've seen that comparison.
Yeah,
in fact, you know what, I'm going to jump real quick, because that's what I thought of, you know, kind of trying to find why they're doing what he's doing back in the United States. I loved, and I thought the idea was brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I always joke with my wife about it. It's like, it's very easy to compare my stuff to the Bourne stuff, and you get defensive, and you say, well, it's not like it because of this, 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 and this. But then when somebody asks me what your book is like, I'll be like, oh, it's kind of like the Bourne stuff. So I use it to my advantage, but then I get defensive when people, you don't want anyone to think that you're copying something else. But at the same time, it is a great shorthand to turn people in the direction of what type of a novel it is.
Yeah.
It's like Bourne, but with less exclamation points.
Okay, good.
All right. I always thought Ludlum had overused that. But anyway, you're writing two series now, and I've got to ask, just the difficulty of trying to maintain a series. You've got the diehard fans who know what they, you know, both ate for breakfast 6 books ago, that sort of thing. Talk a bit about trying to maintain that series and also sort of keep things straight for everybody.
Now, you're talking about the Clancy series or just both?
And also Gray Man, too, because you've now got the fifth one.
Oh, yeah. It's tough, and people just assume. I get emails, and they're like, and I'll get an email, and it'll be like, oh, my God, dude, last line of chapter 63, couldn't believe it. And that's the whole email. And I don't know what book they're talking about. I have no idea what happens on chapter 63 in any one of my books or whatever. And so people almost feel like you're looking at, as they're reading your book, that you're actually watching them do it over the shoulder. And you get all these references to little things. And a guy just the other day was like, man, I love that joke about 72 virgins in your last book. And I finished Backblast like a year ago. That's just the cycle of how these books work when you do 2 books a year. And I had to email the guy back. I was like, hey, what was my joke? I'm glad you liked it. Can you remind me? Because I might want to tell it again. And I hate to have to read my 533-page book to remember what that joke was that I told. But I was glad he liked it. So with the Tom Clancy world, that's a big thing, too. I remember when I did the first Tom Clancy book I did, a guy sent me this super angry email because I had Domingo Chavez jumping out of an airplane and using a parachute. And this guy was so angry. He's like, I threw the book across the room when he did the parachute jump because in 1989's Clear and Present Danger, he said he never went to jump school. And, you know, this book came out in 2012. And the guy was so mad at me because the character in 89 in a Tom Clancy book said he never went to jump school. I mean, you know, obviously 30 years had passed and he could have learned how to parachute, but there's that level of fervor and that level of understanding of the details. So I'm responsible for the Clancy books now, and I'm responsible for the Gray Man books, and there's no one looking over my shoulder. I have an editor, but it's not his responsibility to remember what I called Core Gentry's father in the first book or what town that he lived, you know, that he grew up in and that sort of stuff. So it's work. You go back and look at stuff and you spend a lot of time. Sometimes you'll kind of paint yourself into a corner with an idea that you thought you were going to exploit in book two of the Gray Man series. And here you are in book five and you want to go in a different way. So you have to kind of like finagle your way out, not change what you said in the first book, a couple of books, but fit it into the fifth book. So it's tough, but I mean, it's a good problem to have. If you're a guy, you know, my first book came out when I was 42 years old And I wanted to be a writer pretty much all my adult life. So every time I get mad at myself, every time I get frustrated with something like that, I go, what a problem to have, just punch yourself in the face. It's like you're in a good position, and that's work, but that's work that you want to do. So I don't really mind it at all.
See, and Jeff said, well, you're writing two series now, and it's like, how do you keep things straight? I'm like, boy, you're lazy. Only two series? Come on, man. You do better than that.
No,
I do three books a year.
Yeah, come on. You can do three.
It's funny. A lot of people who like my stuff also like Brad Taylor's stuff, which I do too, obviously, and he's a friend of mine. And they'll be like, there's a new Pike Logan book out every 9 months. How come I had to wait a year for this, Gray Man book? And I'm like, well, I'm also doing the Clancy stuff, pal. It becomes this kind of like, contest between different guys to see if you can get your book out faster, which should never be the point. But as a reader and as a fan of a lot of different books, I'm the same way. It's like you discover a new author and you want to go back and read all their backlist. And then once you've got it read, you're like, no. It's like now I'm dependent on this guy and, how much TV he watches or how many kids he has to read his next book. So,
I mean, and if people have seen how big the Clancy book is, shit, that's like two books in one.
Yeah, they are.
Let's put it this way. That book is so big, it's like a fucking murder weapon at this point.
It is. You could use it as several other things as well as novels. Yeah. They're about 200,000 words, and in fact,
that's a massive undertaking.
They sent me to a Books a Million's warehouse to sign books one day, just to sign as many as I could in one day. And they had thousands upon thousands. They said, just do as much as you can. So I'm a competitive guy, and I was there, and I was like, what's the record? What's the most that were signed in one day? And they said, well, one author signed 3,500 books in one day. And I was like, all right, 3,501, that's my goal. And we started at 8 o'clock, and I just signed like crazy all day, and I only did 2,900, and I was so depressed. But then they're like, yeah, but you only fit 10 books in a case because your books are so big.
Exactly.
So we spent all our time like reloading the pallet and unloading the pallet and opening the boxes and all this other stuff. It's like that really slows it down. And I was like, okay, I feel much better. So. And then I actually signed my name, where some authors just pretty much squiggle. I haven't been at this so long to where I squiggle yet.
Now, you mentioned something, though, in your last sentence. You kind of said that you were talking about, when you're writing, things might change a little bit, and you have to fit stories into things. Have you ever thought of an idea, and I'm sure you have ideas, that you're like, this just will not work as a Gray Man novel, but it's such a wonderful idea that maybe I'll have to write as a standalone one day. You got those ideas floating around your head, or when you get ideas like that, do you say, I need to fit it so it works in a Gray Man novel?
Yeah, I never do that. I have standalone ideas that are totally not Gray Man. And there's some things I could probably totally just milk and tweak or whatever, but I think a lot of people that write...
Now, any of them outside of the CIA realm? Anything outside of that? Anything like totally different?
No, not totally genre different. Definitely wider in the genre, not CIA stuff, and not really espionage, but definitely thriller type stuff. But I have no I did have an idea for a book that I won't go into it because it'll take too long, but I pitched it to my agent, and he's like, that's a great idea. We would want to use a different name for that because that people wouldn't associate that with you. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird. I just have too many other things that I want to do. But I do have lots of ideas for standalones, and I would really like to do them. I would be very much into doing a real straightforward military novel with a buddy of mine who's in the military, and we've talked about it a lot. And I think that's on the horizon at some point. And that's, you see elements of that in the Clancy book, but this would be, a little different. But that's certainly the same genre. It's a little different than the Gray Man. But I'll get ideas, and I'll be like, well, this doesn't quite work for the Gray Man, but it might work for a Clancy book, or it'll just go into the back of my head, and everything gets used. When you write two books a year, I mean, you can't go to the refrigerator and pull out a liter of milk without there's possibility you're going to use that in a book somehow.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, the truth is, John was hoping you'd write a book about unicorns, and now he's disappointed. So.
Oh, I am, especially after watching the movie Deadpool. I will never look at unicorns again in the same way.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, well, now I'm telling you, and I was gonna I'm gonna review the movie on the second half of the show, but I will just say that you will not look in unicorns in the same way.
All right, I want to see it. I have friends that want.
Yeah, go see it. Without a doubt.
Okay.
Go see it. It's a little on the vulgar side, so Jeff can't go with his kids, but
yeah.
Go see it.
My son wants to see it. You mentioned two books a year.
Yeah.
I have to ask you this because you're the only author I've ever seen this happen to. Your two books came out on the same day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was odd.
That doesn't happen every time. That happened for Deadeye, which was my fourth Gray Man book, and Command Authority, which was my the third book I did with Tom Clancy. And that was a total coincidence. It really was a coincidence because these are two different publishers that work for the same, both work for Penguin. So, I mean, you know, there could be a conspiracy to get them out at the same day, but I just know how the inner workings work, and it was just that was when the books were done. The Deadeye, which just came out, my fifth Gray Man, I actually finished it before Commander-in-Chief, which was my sixth Clancy, which came out last December. So they kind of came out helter-skelter of each other. In fact, when I just started doing publicity for Backlash, my fifth Gray Man book, a couple of days before I started doing the publicity, I had this panic attack because I was like, wait a second, I haven't read this book in about 10 months. Or, you know, it had been 10 months since I'd finished it, and I'd written 200,000 words worth of Clancy since then. And the only galley, I didn't have any galleys of the book because I'd given them all out. They only sent me like 8. But I'd given my 90-year-old aunt one. It was on a shelf at her house because she's so proud of me. And I was like, I've got to go steal my galley off of Dorothy's shelf at my aunt's house so I can reacquaint myself with this novel before I go on this publicity tour. So I didn't actually steal it. I asked her very nicely. I said, can I borrow that book back so I can remind myself what's in it? And so I spent a weekend just kind of like quickly going back over it before the publicity tour started because I'd written so much Clancy in the meantime. I didn't want to get, you know, stumped by somebody asking me this layup question, you know, about my book that I didn't remember the answer to, but it worked out okay.
Now, we're kind of coming down to the end here, so I want to talk a little bit about, you know, like the future, and I know that you said that The Gray Man was coming out, and you have another Clancy one coming out, but kind of, I guess, a little beyond that, I mean, do you kind of see the Clancy stopping and the Gray Man taking over? Are you always going to be kind of doing two, or do you not really know until like year after year? Does Clancy only happen like a book a time, and then they give you a next one, and then the next one? I mean, how does that kind of work? I think a lot of people don't really understand, like fans, you know, they don't really understand how that's going to be because they see a lot of authors like Clive Cussler or Patterson, and they kind of see those names change all the time.
Yes, and honestly, I wasn't sure I was going to do the Clancy book this year for the very, very simple reason, and I was just straight up with my editor, even while I was writing book 6, it's like, if I don't have an idea for book 7, I don't want to do it. I don't want to go back to the well and you know, do it twice. The books get harder to do as you pick the low-hanging fruit, and I wanted to have a really cool, fresh idea for the next one, because each one of these books, I'd gotten really passionate about, oh my gosh, I want to talk about Russia in the Baltic, or I want to talk about Russia in the Ukraine, or North Korea acquiring ICBM. You know, there's always this big idea for each book, and I didn't immediately have one to do the next Tom Clancy, and they'd asked me, my editor said, you know, we'd like you to do another Tom Clancy book, and I pushed back a little bit, and I said, well, I really need to come up with something, and so we talked, and it wasn't until I guess the end of December where I kind of got a kernel of an idea. We played with it. I talked to my editor, who's been Tom Clancy's editor for a long time, and he's fantastic to bounce ideas off from. And you end up feeling like you thought it up yourself, but you know, he had more to do with it than you did. And by the end, I felt really good doing a seventh. So I only agree to do one book at a time just because I want them to stay fresh. And I'm a reader before I'm a writer, still, even at this point. And we've all read the series that should have been put to bed because that, you know, you sort of feel like they're phoning them in a little bit at some point. And I'm panicky about that, you know, and I always want to have fresh ideas. I always want to go places and meet new people and get new angles on things so that my writing stays fresh and interesting and different. And I feel really good about this Clancy that I'm going to work on this year because the idea came to me, but I don't know that that'll happen next year or the next year. So who knows if I'll do another one. They are working on a film for my first Gray Man book, The Gray Man. And
nice. About
that
freaking time.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's Hollywood. But they will, you know, that'll push that series a little bit anyhow. And I would like to keep doing that, but I'd also like to do other things as well.
Yeah. Now, last question, kind of real quick thing, because I remember seeing a review, and I think it was for the last book of the Clancy one you wrote, and someone literally wrote in the review, "Clancy does it again," and I'm like, you dumb freaking person, he died. And I mean, do you ever get that, like when you go to a book signing or something, and people walk up and they say, wait a second, you're not Tom Clancy, where's he? And you're like, yeah, he's in the ground is where he is. I mean, I'm writing the book now.
If you asked me that a half an hour ago, I wouldn't have let you get a word back in edgewise for the last half an hour because it's so funny. I did a signing at Fort Belvoir in December. They send me to a lot of military bases for the Clancy book, and it's
sure.
awesome. You meet just the coolest people. I get business cards. I talk to people, and I sign hundreds of books. And I tell somebody about every 15 minutes that, nope, I'm not Tom Clancy. Oh, nope. Let me stop you there as they start telling me how I changed their life in the 1980s and I'm the reason that they went into submarines and all this other stuff. And there was one lady, and this happened at Fort Hood and Quantico and different places, but there was one lady at Fort Belvoir. I never corrected her. I just let her go with it because she was so happy to meet me. And everybody else I took the time to correct. And it was really kind of slowing up the speed of the line. And one guy, like, took his hat off, and he had been on the USS Dallas. He's like, can I get you to sign my hat? And I said, buddy, I promise you do not want me to sign your hat. And then I explained to him that I wasn't Tom Clancy and all that. And so that happens a lot. And then as you said, I'll see things on Amazon. And if they like the book, they'll be like, Clancy does it again. And if they don't like the book, they'll be Mark Graney Blows. You know, it's just like, wow, suddenly they know who the co-author is. They don't like it. But if they like it, it's Tom Clancy. So I just, you know, it bothered me the first couple of years, but now I just have a good laugh about it.
Or at the book signing, you should just say, you know what, but I'm still pissed I wasn't able to buy the fucking Vikings back then when I was trying to buy them, and, you know, it just changed my whole complexion on outlook of life.
I always wish they would start with step, you know, first things first, you look fantastic. You know,
yep.
for being a guy that would have to be at least 70 because I was in high school when Hunt for Red October came out. But they will. They'll say, like, oh, my God, in Hunt for Red October, that book changed my life or whatever. And I was like, yeah, it kind of changed my life, too, when I read it, you know, a couple years after it came out.
I remember watching the movie.
Exactly. but, yeah, you correct people all the time. Yeah, and they always feel bad. And I'm always like, you know, don't feel bad. I mean, Tom Clancy's name is in large print, but it does say Meet Mark Graney right behind me.
Right.
And, you know, as you were going through the line at some point, it would have been great if you'd seen that. I told my publicist that I'm going to ask for a T-shirt next year when I do the signing tour that says, hi, I'm not Tom Clancy, you know, on the T-shirt. But who knows, maybe that'll hurt the tour so they won't do it. But
yeah, you should say, hi, I'm not Tom Clancy, I'm the actual author.
Yeah.
Oh, man, well, I'll tell you what, Mark.
Words.
It has been, you can put on the back. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you again. Again, it won't take that much time to have you back on. And I want to remind everybody, of course, that you want to go to Mark's website. You go to markgraneybooks.com, GRENEYbooks.com, for more information. The book is Backblast. It's the latest
awesome.
In the Gray Man series. So we want to thank you so much for coming on, Mark.
Hey, my pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Anytime you email me. Now that we have our email addresses straight, because I emailed you during the show, you got back to me. That was freaking funny. So now that we finally got our email addresses, because I realized, I'm like, I don't have his personal email address. That sucks. So, yeah.
We went through
so
Lauren to get you, so, but this is good.
Yeah, we went through Lauren.
Yeah.
But Lauren's nice, too, so that was good, too.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, thanks so much. I enjoyed it. It was a great time.
All right, man. You have a good one. We'll talk to you later.
Take care. Good luck with the book.
Thank you, sir.
So, again, everybody, that was Mark Greaney, and the book is called Back Blast, the latest Gray Man book. And then, of course, you can also read Commander in Chief, which is the latest Clancy book, which, yeah, that's right, Mark also fucking wrote. So make sure that you can check those out. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be back. Just got some book reviews. I'm going to review Deadpool, and we're going to talk about some other things. So stick around right after this. Everybody here after the break, we want to thank you guys all for staying around with us on Beyond the Cover. Of course, we want to thank Mark for being with us. Fabulous guy, and it's so great to see his career just shoot off into the stratosphere. Really nice guy, so it's great when you see that happen. So, Jeff, let's kick it off with you. You got a book here to review, and then I'll talk a little bit about Deadpool, and then we'll just jump into some other shit. So do it up.
Sounds good. Wait a minute. I'm finishing putting my guitar away. Did you like my music?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So the book I want to talk about is, it's called Try Not to Breathe.
Oh.
And the author is Holly Sedon, and it's S-E-D-D-O-N. And it's a first novel. And when I got it initially, I was like, oh, good Lord, here's another novel that's, you know, the narrator that you can't trust, and the cover even looks like it's trying to do the girl on the train and Gone Girl stuff. And I'm going, oh, God, here we go. But
yeah.
I got to tell you, this novel was great, and it doesn't do the unreliable narrator at all. And that was pleasant surprise. So ignore the crappy cover. But the basic premise of this is...
Do we have to go over crappy cover comment again? Because I think we did
Saying, we did, and this one falls into that category, seriously. It should be called Wake the Hell Up. Anyway...
I love it.
So the basic premise is a young girl named Amy Stevenson, 15 years ago, makes a horrible decision and ends up in a coma. So present day, we have a reporter who's sort of disgraced, and she's trying to get back on her feet. She's recently divorced, and she's battling alcohol issues. And she sees an opportunity to write an article about Amy, and she's in a hospice-type place, and she's in this total coma. And as what first starts off to be a story about her and what happened, it ends up this reporter starts thinking of her as a friend. And so what do friends do? They try to help each other. So she decides, I'm going to find out what happened to her, and I'm going to solve this crime that's never been solved. And it is, you know, it's like, okay, this has kind of been done before too, but the characters are terrific, the storyline is terrific, and the writing is stellar. And I got to tell you, the payoff is there. So I highly recommend this to people. Try not to breathe.
Now, when you first started and picked it up then, so it changed you through, when you finished it, you were like, wow, this was really not what I expected.
Yeah, in fact, I just kept going, and I kind of in the back of my mind waited for that moment where I went, here we go. And
happened. Like when is Donald Trump finally going to implode, right? Kind of like waiting for that to happen.
Exactly, yeah. And that might not happen too. Who knows? But
I know. God help us all.
Yeah, I'm still debating why this book had the title. That's one. Well, that and the cover too. So ignore the title. Ignore the cover. She's a great writer. I look forward to her next book.
Now, I don't have a book review, but the book that I'm reading now is called Murder at the 42nd Street Library, which, of course, means...
I have that, too.
The New York Library. You got that one, too?
I have that.
Yeah, I have it
on my desk
here. Because I'm a fan, of course, of... I love mysteries, and I like to read whodunits. And the book starts off right in the face, boom, murder, going, mystery. And I was like, this could be good. So I haven't... you know, I've only gotten into maybe a third of it. So far, so good. Let's just hope that he keeps up. I've never read anything from this guy. At first, I thought it was Dennis Lehan's brother or something, but I don't think he is. His name is Con Lehan. But I was like, you know what? Maybe that's Dennis just with another name. But I don't think it is.
He's conning you.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I did find out is that he published a couple books about a New York City bartender, Brian McNulty. Does that name ring a bell to you?
No, it doesn't.
Wasn't that the character's name in Cocktail with Tom Cruise? I forget who played him, but wasn't that guy's name Brian McNulty?
Honestly, I saw that movie so long ago and I tried to block it out of my mind. I don't know.
Oh,
I do remember in Days of Thunder, his name was Cole Trickle, which I still make
no,
laugh.
No. The guy who, not Tom Cruise's character, the other guy.
Oh.
Okay. I was wrong. No. The other guy. Okay. Tom Cruise was Brian Flanagan. Okay. For some reason, I was like, New York City bartender. His name is Brian, because I knew there was a Brian in the movie. And I'm like, that was a little close, but I was, okay. So, okay. I was just curious.
Well,
I,
let me go on
I
a quick rant here. The only reason I'm interested in this book is because Thriller Fest every year is like three blocks from that library, and I've been there several times. I'm a librarian myself. why is it that murder mystery set in libraries are all the friggin' same? You know, you get the
in
dead
what
body in stacks, and I get tired of that. So that's actually why I wrote that. That's
okay.
why I wrote the
well,
thriller set in a library.
No, there's no dead body in the stacks at the beginning of this one.
Oh, very good.
That's
okay.
not where the murder happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right. That's a plus. Good to know.
In fact,
right,
it starts off more like a non-mystery whodunit and starts off more like a suspense thriller, how the murder takes place, because you are like almost following the murder as it happens, and then boom, then they're gone. And then it kind of happens. So I know it says a mystery because it's probably a whodunit, but it's not reading like your typical whodunit mystery right now. It's not like a setup of characters and then the murder and then the solving. The murder happens right at the beginning, and then it's the rest. So it's set up a little different, even though it's pretty much a whodunit.
Okay, that's good
yeah.
to hear.
So you'll be pleasantly surprised.
I like it when I am. Yes.
The other thing that made me pleasantly surprised was the movie Deadpool. And now people are probably wondering, oh, it's rated R. What does that mean? I will tell you right now, it's rated R for a very good reason. It is. I mean, there's a lot of vulgar going on in there. There's a lot of death scenes going on in there, and it's some pretty violent death. Now, of course, you know, people's heads getting chopped off and stuff. But if you can kind of look past that, because you've kind of seen it so many times, and it kind of has like some Matrix stuff into it, where they slow things down and how it is. But it is hilarious. I mean, this is one of the top three best superhero movies I've ever seen, because they don't take it seriously. Deadpool doesn't take him seriously. In fact, he gets upset when he's trying to, when people are calling him a hero. He's like, that's the one thing I'm not, is your hero. So I found it, you know what, that other studios are going to look at this and they're going to have to up their game, because DC and Marvel do, besides Deadpool, you know, and Marvel, but there's not enough of these kind of characters out there. So I think you might see some creation of these kinds of characters, because, I mean, I wouldn't run to the movie theater and go see the movie. And you're going to have to see it more than once, because there's so many. I mean, they make fun of so many different movies, of X-Men to Avengers to Iron Man to Thor to Matrix to some I mean, they make fun of everything, and you're not even going to catch it all. You won't even catch all the one-liners that are going up, because you'll be laughing so hard that they'll say something else.
They announced today about it that Deadpool has already made more money than all the X-Men movies did.
Oh,
and
worldwide?
That just blows my mind.
Worldwide, probably, because, I mean, it's worth it. I mean, you see the opening credits. Not in the opening credits, you know right away you're in a different movie when it says, instead of the people's names, it says a hot chick, a CGI character, a cameo. I mean, that's what they show. You know, it's produced by an overpaid rich guy. It's directed by asshats. It's written by the real heroes here. I mean, that's the credits. That's rolling at the beginning, and you just start laughing because you don't expect it, and you're like, what am I in for? And then it just kicks it right off at the beginning. And the one thing that I found very interesting too, and this is not going to give anything away, is it's not set up like a normal superhero movie where you see the character, how he is, and then something happens, and then he changes into, you know, it's like that 1-2-3 act system. Okay, he's a normal guy, and then he changes and is trying to find himself, and then act 3, he finds himself, and then he becomes powerful. No, this starts off with him as Deadpool, and then this whole scene goes on, and then he says, let's go back, and then it goes back for a little bit, and then it goes present, and then it goes back again, and then it goes present. So the origin story is built within, like, the first half hour, but it's not just straight through to the origin of how he became the way he is. And I found that refreshing, too. That was
good. That's cool. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, walk, you know, run, don't walk to the movie theater and make sure you check it out. But and you
I'm
have to stay
till
the very end. Stay till the very end, because if you're, and I'm not going to say what it is, but if you're a fan of 80s movies, stay till the very end. Just like every other Marvel movie, there's a cutout. And if you're a fan of 80 movies, you will crack the hell up at the end of it.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to this.
So,
thank you.
You know, and that also brings to a point, because you mentioned kind of off the air to talk about maybe like Amazon bookstores that they're going to open, and we can kind of get into that a little bit if you wanted to. And then the other thing that I thought of is I was reading a story online, and and I think because of the success of Deadpool and rated R movies, they're bringing it back out into a more adult setting. They're starting – I just saw now that they're remaking the show One Day at a Time, and I'm like, okay. So I see all these remakes, and they keep trying to – I mean, they remade Point Break, you know, a great movie, and they just totally fucked the whole thing up with what they did on this
got
one.
Got that right.
Oh, so the question kind of is that, you know, we can talk a little bit about Amazon bookstores. We can kind of get into this. We got about 15 minutes left, but is there – a movie that if they remade, you wouldn't see just on principle because it was so good before? And is there something that you would like to see made that isn't, that Hollywood just isn't getting? I pose that to you, Jeff.
Well, let me throw a question back at you, because I was on a Star Trek panel, and I was asked the question, well, you know, Star Trek was a successful relaunch, and what, you know, what other things have you liked that have been successful relaunches? And it dawned on me, the only other one I could think of was Mission Impossible.
Oh yeah.
And I think about,
they didn't really make movies before. They made the TV shows, but now you mean successful relaunch like in this movie compared to like the first, second, and third ones?
No, I mean like let's take a franchise that people are familiar with, and let's put it on the big screen and launch it with different people
gotcha,
or different actors.
Gotcha.
And they did it with Star Trek. They did it with Mission Impossible. But, you know, I think about other things that they've tried to do, and it's been pretty crappy. And
well, now, I live in Los Angeles.
It makes me think that people don't have original ideas anymore. There's so much great stuff we talk about on this show. And, you know, he mentioned Gray Man being a movie. That'd be fantastic.
Yes.
And what's going to happen is something's going to be remade, and that's going to maybe stop the production of Gray Man as a result. And that just bothers me to no end. It's like there's – if you got a great screenplay, go with that. Don't throw something on the screen that people are familiar with and just assume that the nostalgia value is all you need.
Well, I don't know if
we,
you heard
we mentioned
this,
Avengers,
I mean,
the Marvel.
I mean,
I have to say the Avengers, based on the British spy show, is without a doubt one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Was that the Uma Thurman movie?
Mm-hmm. And Sean Connery in a bear suit.
Right. Yeah. Well, again, so being in L.A., I kind of hear some things, and I kind of see some things and people, and I was talking to a guy the other day, and he had heard some rumblings, and I don't know if this is going to piss you off or not, but the talk is they're thinking about doing another Indiana Jones movie.
If it's Harrison Ford.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, there's the catch. The catch is that it will be Harrison Ford, but he will be like – it could be a Harrison Ford handoff to another guy. You know, so it's like Indiana Jones passing the torch to somebody else to hit the franchise off again.
That was the rumor for the last one with Shia LaBeouf.
Right, but Shia LaBeouf is a butthead, so they knew they screwed that one up.
Well, you said it, I didn't, but... yeah, I'm glad they didn't go that route.
He doesn't listen to the show anyway, so fuck him. I don't care.
He might. Who knows?
Hey,
he might
if you
be
do,
one
come
of
on the show,
listeners.
Tyler,
anyway,
tell us how you screwed up Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Yeah, that's a great example of if Harrison Ford does it and does one last Indiana Jones, sort of the blaze of glory type thing, and then they stop it. Don't recast the role. I know they were talking about Chris Pratt maybe being the new Indiana Jones for a while.
Because, you know, they tried to do the TV series of the young Indiana Jones, and that didn't really do very well. And I think they're just trying to capitalize on the money aspect. But I wasn't a big fan of that.
No, yeah, I agree. It was more of a history show than it was about the action-adventure type thing.
Right.
They kind of forgot that.
Right.
Yeah, oh, it's nice. Indiana Jones met a person in history. I'm so thrilled. No, I wasn't.
I mean, and a lot of the times, and I'll just take the TV show one day at a time, because I'm a huge fan of 70s and 80s TV shows, you know, like Cheers and Barney Miller and Night Court and those types of shows. And they're bringing back one day at a time, a show that you probably wouldn't think about they would bring that back out. But they are. And, you know, they have to update everything. Instead of just having it like a funny show with funny lines, you know, they're making it now the lady is going to be Cuban. And so she's a Cuban lady. She doesn't have two daughters. She has a daughter and she has a son. And then she has her mother living with her. And it's like, you've already now made it that people like me are not going to like it, because you have great source material of already with One Day at a Time. So why do you have to go screw it up and do something
else?
Why
call it One Day at a Time?
Right.
Call it something else. We wouldn't know.
Call it something else. Don't call it One Day at a Time. Because that's like bringing out Cheers, and then you just totally change the whole thing. It's like people are not going to like it, and it's not going to stick. It just isn't. You know, I get the whole thing right now that they're doing with TV, which is, you know, Gotham, which I'm not a fan of, Flash, Green Arrow, you know, they're doing all these, because Smallville was so popular, they're doing all these young things now. It's like, let's go back and let's look at their young days. Well, to me, you're taking away the superhero aspect, and you're trying to bring, you know, this young crowd into it, but that's not the crowd that grew up with it. So you basically turned it into a teenage soap opera using these heroes as your set piece. And I don't watch any of them, and it just doesn't work for me. I don't like any of them. I've tried. I tried Arrow. I was done after 7 episodes. Tried Flash. I was done after 2. I tried Gotham. I was done after 10. I was just finished. I didn't like it.
I made it farther in Gotham than I did. I watched the first season of The Flash, and I liked it, but I realized I don't really care. And
right,
I realized
that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
I mean, you know what I was watching today? I was watching the Batman Adventures when the four seasons they had the Batman Adventures. And I'm like, you know what? This stuff is just so much better animated. It really is, because they can do so many different things. The characters can be themselves. I think that those stuff is made for animation on the TV level, but on the movie level, I do like I said, what they did with Deadpool, what they've done with Captain America and the Avengers. They can take more liberties on the big screen because they can act a little bit different. But when they're on the TV, for some reason, I think I just like animation better with those things. I don't know.
Do you watch S.H.I.E.L.D. at all?
The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
No, I tried watching that for like 2 episodes, and I'm like, this is fucking boring.
How do I just say this? It's a show that got better, then it got worse, then it got better, then it got worse. And so patience pays off for it. But I'm a big Clark Gregg fan. I love his Coulson character. But the guy died in the Avengers, and so they really had to stretch to bring him back.
I mean,
stretch.
And like you just said, you said the magic word, patience. And the problem is Netflix, Amazon, all these other stations now are all doing their own original programming that I don't have a lot of patience. You know why? Because I got 50 other places I could go for entertainment without waiting for the writers and the producers of this show to finally get their act together.
Right.
You know, that's what I got. I have so much I can go to that I don't have to wait anymore, because if I don't like it, I'm like, screw it, I'll just go over and check out this Netflix series or this Amazon series or this series on USA or this series. You know, I can just go all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Amazon bookstores kicking the shit out of Barnes & Noble and finally printing some goddamn books that you could put into a store instead of the Barnes & Noble crap that you get. So I'm happy Amazon's doing bookstores. That was a great segue right into the Amazon bookstore thing, because I think it's
very
a great idea.
I visited the one in Seattle, and it was a very nice experience.
Was that open when we were there? It wasn't open, was it?
It was not.
Okay.
No,
because
but,
you know what's funny?
You're getting one in San Diego.
Amazon bookstores will actually have Amazon-printed books in their stores, something that Barnes & Noble does not do. Anything from Thomas and Mercer or any of that stuff, Barnes & Noble won't.
Can I confess something to you?
What?
This is absolutely true. I went into that store, and I made it my mission to find some Amazon-published books. Do you know how many I found?
No.
Zero.
What?
Yep, absolutely true. It was a regular bookstore, and the only thing about it that was different was they have a tag underneath each book, and all the books face out, so you don't have to look at the spines. And you take your app, and you scan the tag, and then whatever the price is on Amazon online is what you pay in the store.
Okay, well, that's cool. I got to think, though, if they're going to open 300 or 400 stores, they're going to have some Thomas and Mercer 47 North printed books that are,
I would
that
think
are popular.
So,
of course, they're not going to put them all. Put some of them in there.
Yeah, I did not see any. And that just blew my mind.
So here's the thing. So for all those publishers like Hache and Simon & Schuster and the ones, I don't know if Simon & Schuster had a problem with Amazon, but I think HarperCollins maybe or Penguin, are they going to be happy and play nice with Amazon bookstores? Because, you know, there's a big author contingency that is pissing on Amazon, which I do not agree with. I think Amazon has only helped authors. I don't think that they've hurt authors in any way. I don't think that they have a monopoly on books, because you can go to several different places and buy books if you want to. It just so happens you go to Amazon because, well, they got the biggest selection and they got the best freaking price.
And they're quick and convenient. Kindly told me, they said, if you have a problem with Amazon selling your books, just pull them off the site.
That's it. Yeah, pull it off if you don't like them. You ain't going to do that, though, are you?
Nope.
No, instead you're going to bitch and moan about Amazon is monopolizing all the books. And they're not, no, they're not. You can still go to Barnes & Noble and buy the books. But you know why you don't buy them on your Nook? Because the Nook sucks and the Kindle's better. And even iBooks for Apple, you can do it. The only thing about iBooks for Apple is they don't have as many sales as Amazon does. It's a little bit more full price. But it's still a good experience. They still give you good recommendations. I look at iBooks all the time. I compare. I'll go to iBooks and Amazon and see which one's cheaper, and that's who I'll buy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do, too.
Yeah,
and
I found some free books on
Apple
that's not on Amazon.
People I know who have the Nook hate it.
Yeah, the Nook sucks. I mean, come on, it's made by Barnes & Noble. I mean, what do you expect? Well, I'll tell you, we're coming down to to the end, my man. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. It's always a pleasure to speak with you and have you. You know, Mark, great. It's always great to have this. You know, it's so nice to have this time together. That's my
Carol
Burnett thing. So, all right, everybody. So
in
until
2 weeks,
next time,
in 2 weeks, it's Rebecca Drake who will be on with us.
Rebecca Drake, nice. Well, in 2 weeks, Jeff, we will talk again.
It's been
a
pleasure.
Until that time, my good man, you have a nice one.
You too. Good night.
Good night, everybody. And like we always like to say, keep on reading. Have a good one. See you next time.